it's not like the pianist is just accompanying. They're both equally putting their parts into the music.
Let our listeners in on the process of how we arrived ultimately at the collaboration that we did.
We had different ideas about like whether we should crescendo here, decrescendo, and how long a certain phrase should be, either 2 bars, 4 bars. But I think we knew what we did want.
Right.
We were able to kind of make a compromise and then come to this interpretation.
Yeah, beautifully said. You started on piano. How did you end up with the viola in your hands?
Basically, it was pure pressure because my friends, they had already been playing string instruments and I wanted to join the orchestra that they were in. So I started playing the violin. But it turns out that the orchestra had all the violin spots taken. So I switched to the viola. I got into the orchestra and I've just been playing the viola ever since. The first piece I played that I was like, I'm a violist now, was the Hummel Fantasy. And I get nostalgic kind of just thinking about that one.
Yeah, it's a great piece. What are some of the musical experiences you've had or performances you've had that you're most proud of?
Playing the Paganini Grand Sonata, mainly because it's just such a hard piece. I didn't think I could pull it off.
Did he write that for viola?
He did. It's like his only piece that he wrote for the viola. It is insanely difficult. It was my first actual performance.
Whoa.
And the fact that I actually pulled it off decently well and better than I expected, it makes it probably my biggest accomplishment.
Nice. Well, it's something to be proud of for sure. What's something you do outside of music that's important for you?
Speech and debate.
Okay.
It's an activity that I've been doing starting freshman year in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, it has led me through the greatest personal development of my life. And that's mainly because of the social aspect of it. Because before I did speech and debate, I was the most introverted introvert to ever exist. I did not know how to like talk to people at all. The people in the speech and debate community have actually been really welcoming and they encouraged me to talk to them. And that was really nice. And then the activity itself is just so helpful because when you go to tournaments, you have to be able to give speeches under pressured conditions with limited amount of preparation. So you just have to talk. And when I first started, I was completely unable to do so. But now that I've been doing it for like 4 years, I've gotten way better at talking.
Yeah, you're beautifully articulate and eloquent. Clearly it's working. Has speech and debate informed your musical life in any way?
Definitely, because just being able to socialize and communicate my thoughts to other people is extremely important in the musical world as well.
Right.
And so it has
right.
helped me make a lot of musician friends.
That's beautiful. Stephen, thank you for being with us. Thanks for playing that Brahms with me.
Thank you so much.
Stephen Chang, 17 years old, from Southlake, Texas.
Are you craving more From the Top? We've got you covered. Listen to extended interviews on the From the Top podcast. Watch exceptional musical performances on From the Top Daily Joy videos. And discover opportunities to meet From the Top in person. Find this and more on our website. Visit fromthetop.org.
Support for NPR comes from the station and from the Massachusetts Office of Travel and Tourism, offering visitors information about the arts, culture, and history of Boston. The journey begins at visitma.com. From BritBox, with the goal of helping people discover a world of British TV, including new original series Archie, The Man Who Became Cary Grant, streaming at BritBox.com/NPR. And from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation at rwjf.org.
Thank you.
Welcome back to From the Top, where outstanding young musicians come to play. I'm your host, pianist Peter Dugan. It's so great to be with all of you this week and every week, thanks to the generosity of Susan and Gerald Slavitt. I'm so excited about getting to perform sonatas with our young musicians. I love that the sonata offers the opportunity for some really intimate dialogue between us. I'm now going to be in the sure hands of 17-year-old bassoonist Zachary Peisner from Calabasas, California, and we're going to perform the first movement of the bassoon sonata by Saint-Saëns. Zachary Peisner, 17-year-old bassoonist from Calabasas, California, performed the first movement of Camille Saint-Saëns' Sonata for Bassoon and Piano. I'm Peter Dugan. I was joining Zachary on that performance.
It was amazing.
Thank you.
I feel like we got what we set out to do. All of the phrasing things, all of those highs and lows, the interplay between us, I was feeling it.
I think it came out well.
Yeah. Whenever you play a sonata, it's like we're really collaborating, you know? So
yeah.
Any takeaways from the process for you?
I mean, I've probably never worked with such a good pianist. It was really easy for me to do what I wanted to do here because you were so like on top of it. And you were like very guiding also.
Yeah.
It was very helpful.
Well, I just want to compliment you in that you're so responsive, as a player. And when I suggest something musically, when I try to create a wave and then you catch the wave, that give and take was totally there. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks.
Tell me about your musical journey. How did it begin?
My musical journey began when I was around 3 or 4. I started on violin and piano. I played both of those for a lot of years, but I didn't love them. And in 5th grade, I started the bassoon because
I wanted to try something new and like unique and fun. And I saw the bassoon. And I was like, it looks really weird. It's like really tall and lanky almost. And I'd never played a wind instrument before. But luckily, I really liked it. It wasn't exactly love at first sight because it was really hard at first. But it was love at around a year in.
So at that point, you just said goodbye to the piano and the violin and decided to really focus in on bassoon?
Well, I said goodbye to the violin because I didn't like that one as much. I still play the piano a little bit, not as much as before. Mm-hmm. For around like 3 years when I was playing bassoon, I also was playing piano at the same time. I really like piano, but it's just bassoon is the instrument for me.
What would you say are the essential qualities of the bassoon that won you over to it?
The thing that I like the most about the bassoon is it's like really deep and rich tone, at least in the lower register. Mm-hmm. But then also in the higher register, you can have that rich tone also. It just feels deep and like grounded almost.
Yeah.
The sound of the bassoon always reminds me of the Shire from The Lord of the Rings. That's kind of the sound I think of. It's kind of that grassy like plains and then there's a house underneath and it's quaint. It's homely, you know.
I love
that's
that.
That's what I think of.
I feel like we have to play.
Yeah.
Yes, the Shire. The homey, cozy quality of that. That's beautiful. How would you describe your instrument if they were a person?
I guess let's keep the analogy of Lord of the Rings. I think it would be like Samwise Gamgee. He's always there for me, you know?
Oh,
he's
a like, loyal he's like companion.
And, you know, sometimes we have off days and sometimes it's like the bassoon doesn't respond as well.
I'm guessing in this analogy, you're kind of Frodo. And so, so sometimes you have to say, go home, Sam. And then the bassoon cries. But you always come back together?
Yeah, exactly.
As you can tell, I'm a real Lord of the Rings nerd. Okay, so what would you say is your favorite way to encounter music? I know that you're sort of a musical omnivore.
Listening while playing. What I just really love to do when I go home, just put on headphones and listen to a random song and then just play along with it. I really love that. It's so relaxing, it's so calming, and it's just fun.
So what kind of a song would you be putting on in that situation?
Literally anything. Some jazz, some classical, some pop, R&B.
I feel like you're a musician after my own heart in the sense that I also love to listen to all music. Do you have a favorite piece?
Yeah. There's a song called Pongamos Cablo de Martinez. Mm-hmm. It's a folk song. It's a Spanish song about this guy who's like reminiscing on this time that he had with a friend where they would like go around bars in Montevideo and just have a good time. And I was like also learning Spanish. And so when I kind of deciphered the lyrics while also listening to it, it was really poignant and powerful. And also just like the simple instrumentation of it, it's just like some bongos and guitar and just he's singing. It makes me imagine being there with him. And I like playing the bassoon with that. So yeah, that's my favorite song.
It seems like you're someone who just totally lives and breathes music. It's all around you. But what do you do with your time outside of music?
I really enjoy fencing and I also really enjoy, you know, spending time with my friends.
Talk to me about fencing.
So I started fencing around the same time that I started bassoon. It was kind of like a good time for me, you know?
Yeah.
Because before that, I also had done a lot of sports that I didn't like. It's kind of the same story, right?
Right, right.
It kind of reminded me of Star Wars, honestly. I felt like I was a Jedi when I was fencing.
Yeah.
So when I was really young, I like got into it that way. And then as I grew older, I was like, this is nothing to do with Star Wars. But
right.
So it's still really fun.
What's something about fencing that you think might surprise some of our listeners?
So there are three blades. There's a foil, an épée, and a saber. Right. I do foil. Each blade has different rules. Épée is the only one that doesn't have the concept of right of way, which is a concept in saber and foil where, like, let's say I'm attacking, so I'm going forward, and then you're kind of going back, and we both hit each other at the same time.
Yeah.
I'll get the point because I'm attacking, right?
Oh, okay.
It's kind of like right of way of the road. But if you go back and I'm going forward and you parry my blade, now the person going back has the right of way because he hit the blade out. So you have to really keep track of that also while doing foil and saber. But because you have an advantage if you're going forward, it's a lot more fast-paced in foil and saber compared to épée.
That's really interesting. Well, Zach, I just want to thank you for your incredible contributions to this sonata that we got to perform together. And thanks for chatting with me. It's great to have you.
Thank you. It was great chatting with you too.
17-year-old bassoonist Zachary Peisner from Calabasas, California. Now it's time for our final young artist of the day, 15-year-old pianist Isabella Coe from Irvine, California. Welcome to From the Top, Isabella.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's so great to have you here. You've got a very special movement of a sonata for us. Is there anything you'd like to share about the piece before our listeners hear it? Because I suspect for many of our listeners, this may be their first time.
This piece is very unconventional in its own way. It brings together the culture of Western classical music as well as Andean folk music. This particular movement draws inspiration from an ensemble style of playing, and so it's where they all sit in a semicircle.
Mm-hmm.
They have zampoñas, which are like panpipes,
mm-hmm.
and then they also have big bass drums, which are called bombos. You'll hear when I'm playing the piano, that's kind of mimicking the sound of the zampoñas.
Okay.
And then whenever I'm clapping, that's kind of vision that as the bombos.
Great. How do you think this piece expresses itself as a sonata?
Well, sonatas, they often go back to the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
This piece, it also does that, where in the beginning, you know, we have that big chord and then we go into the claps.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of the piece, we do the same thing, except kind of like in the Western classical sonatas, it kind of changes a little.
Mm.
You know, we have me clicking the tongue.
I'm very excited to hear it. 15-year-old pianist Isabella Coe from Irvine, California, performing the Sonata Andina by Gabriela Lena Frank. Here's the second movement, titled Himno Inca. Thank you. You heard 15-year-old pianist Isabella Coe from Irvine, California, perform the second movement, Himno Inca, from the Sonata Andina by living American composer Gabriela Lena Frank. Beautiful. Isabella, that was so much fun to witness that performance, to hear and to see, too. And for our listeners, there you were clapping your hands, you were making sounds with your mouth. I'm so curious to look at the score of that piece. I've never seen it. And just listening to it now, I was blown away, but I'm dying to see what it looks like. Can I take a look at the score with you? Great. Wow. Okay, so already this doesn't look like your typical Mozart sonata.
No, not at all.
I see lots of notes that instead of being on a particular line or space of the staff, they're just X's. So tell me, what was going through your head when you first looked at this score, and how did your reaction differ from when you open a Mozart sonata for the very first time?
So definitely when I open up a Mozart sonata, I'm like, I should be able to tackle this easy. Mm-hmm. I'll have to like get into the technicalities and stuff like that. When I opened up this score, however, I saw that, like you said, there are X's. And so my first thought was, oh, these X's, they kind of look like they would be in the position of D, a ray. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, but how does she want me to do that on my hands? Uh-huh. I was just playing around with the clapping sounds. And I think just came to the conclusion that this was kind of representative of the lowest pitch your hands can make. Mm. And so I did that. And then as you see, it kind of goes up to the E.
Right. So even though the note heads themselves look like X's, they're rising on the staff.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. And while it's rising, it's also decrescendoing. So whenever I clap, I always try and clap loud for the first parts. And then when it goes up on the staff, I go towards my wrist and clap there to create a tinier sound.
Okay. So it says here full clap with both hands. And then there's an asterisk to where I'm seeing on the score, it says performance hints. Did you feel like having these hints was just enough to kind of empower you?
Yes, for sure. I'm actually really glad that there were the hints. Otherwise, I definitely would have had much more trouble.
It looks like the hints for the tongue clicks are quite specific.
So, I was reading this and there was so much vocabulary. It was like, produce the tongue click is by a slight suction of the tongue against the palate of the mouth. And I was just like,
Yeah, call your dentist.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But then here, I like how it's written in those quotation marks, tisk, tisk. And so it's like, so I was like, oh, okay, I can do that.
Well, you do it so rhythmically, though.
Thank you.
It's great. As you're clapping, are you counting in your head?
Yeah, for sure. When I was memorizing this piece, whoa, I was like, 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, like just in my head, because it's so simple that it's almost kind of too complicated. So I'm definitely counting in my head, but there's a pattern to it and it just makes sense in the end.
So now are you mostly feeling the number of claps, or is there still a little bit of that kind of 1, 2, 3?
I'm very sure that no matter how long I play this piece, there will always be that small voice at the back of my head.
There
saying,
must be. Of course.
Yeah, but you know, it gets easier.
And you're counting it sort of in two, so it's like 1, 2, 3, like that.
In the beginning part, I count it in fours, but then when the claps go up, I count in twos.
Because so what does that sound like?
So it's just like 1, 2.
Oh, I see.
3, 4, and then when I go up, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 7,
nice. 8. You know what's cool about that is it gives it phrasing. And I think it's important for listeners to know that when you count, it's not just a tally, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, but it has shape. 1, 2, 3, 4. It's going somewhere. And then 1, 2, 3, 4, right? It quickens. Well, great. I just love the way that you performed it. And thank you for sharing this score with me. How about your own sort of research into the style?
So yeah, since this is a relatively newer piece, it was harder to find references that I could take inspiration from. But I kind of just looked more into the culture, because this sonata, it really is about culture. Mm. It's about this idea of mestizaje, where cultures can kind of peacefully coexist together.
You clearly do your homework when you learn a piece of music. And that's what this music calls for, is people who are dedicated and really care about the heart of the music. And so I just want to thank you for really doing it right.
Thank you.
What part does music play in your life?
During COVID time, I really just lost all social interaction with a lot of my friends. Mm-hmm. And also because at the time I switched schools, it was like the beginning of middle school. Yeah. And so going back into school, I kind of lost this voice that I was so good at speaking out with. But then for music, you don't need words. Mm-hmm. So just through this, I was able to, you know, say what I wanted to say without having to elaborate to anybody.
Mm. I also read that you are a very serious tennis player, or at least you were, like, majorly competitive.
Yeah, I was. Now, not so much, but it still was a really big part of my life. I played with my heart.
Do you feel like that's the same attitude that you bring to music competitions?
Yes, for sure. I'm really grateful towards my parents and my piano teacher for really implementing this mindset of it's really what you gain along the way. I have this thing where I say, artists, they're never in pursuit of perfection, but they are of connection.
Ooh.
Yeah. I kind of apply that to everything else. Yeah. We have this kind of thing in my family where it's, if you're going to do it, you do it like 100%.
It's pretty inspiring to talk with you to hear how
thank you.
Passionately you pursue these interests, but while maintaining a very healthy mindset. How do you manage all of these different endeavors and not feel overwhelmed?
At times I do.
Maybe you
definitely,
do feel overwhelmed.
Definitely. Yeah. Uh-huh. My mom, she always tells me, it's not about the long-term goals. Long-term goals will always change. What's important is that you fulfill the short-term goals at this moment. She's like, just think about today. You know, what can I do today?
Nice. I love that idea. I'm going to take that with me. Like in the next 5 minutes.
Yes.
I'm going to at least get to the piano and play a scale.
Yes.
Because sometimes that's the hardest part. It's just getting started. Isabella, at 15 years old, you are teaching me so much. And thank you for being an ambassador for music.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. 15-year-old pianist Isabella Coe from Irvine, California. We'll close out today's episode with a flashback to a very special sonata experience for me. It's a recording from my first season as a guest host for From the Top, taped live in Beaver Creek, Colorado in 2019. Here is Salmon Lake, the finale from the Three Lakes Sonata for Flute and Piano by living American composer Daniel Dorf, with yours truly and From the Top alum flutist Scott Quirk. Thanks to engineer Jim Pavitt at Illusion Studios, engineer Jeffrey Blair at the Draylen Mason Music Studio at KMFA, and thanks to our friends at the Colburn School. A heartfelt thank you to the Jack Kent Cook Foundation. They support our young musicians through the Jack Kent Cook Young Artist Award and, with the Jack Kent Cook Young Scholars Program, provide pre-college scholarships for high-performing 7th grade students with financial need. Find them on the web at jkcf.org. From the Top is produced by Megan Swan and Abigail Desser. Sound design and music editing by John Escobar, with editing and mastering by Rodrigo Cuenca. Our production manager is Amanda Roth. From the Top's executive director is Gretchen Nielsen. From the Top is an independent nonprofit organization based in Boston. If you'd like to appear on our program, apply online at fromthetop.org. From the Top is supported in part by an award from the National Endowment for the Arts, on the web at arts.gov.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from the Massachusetts Cultural Council, a state agency connecting young people with the arts in schools and in their communities. Learn more at massculturalcouncil.org. From BritBox, streaming the Agatha Christie collection, including series like Poirot, Why Didn't They Ask Evans?, and new original mystery, Murder is Easy. The Agatha Christie collection, streaming at BritBox.com/NPR. And from ECMC Foundation, at ecmcfoundation.org.
You're listening to the International Children's Arts Network, an all-classical Portland public media station.